You're listening to the Monocle Arts Review. I'm Ben Rylan, and today I'm going to be digesting the week in television with arts and entertainment writer for The Telegraph, Alice Vincent. We have some period drama and dark comedy later on in the show, but before that, let's get a hit of the second season of Netflix's Colombian drug ring saga, Narcos. Alice, welcome to the program as ever. Now, plenty of people watched the first season of this show, which of course is based on the story of the notorious cocaine kingpin, Pablo Escobar. Perhaps just bring us up to scratch. Where did we leave season one? It's almost easy to forget where season one ended now that we're into season two, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you watched season one, pretty much sure that you would have finished season two by now. It's as addictive
well, look,
as...
Look, I did watch season one and I was completely addicted, but okay. I can't work my way through season two just
That's
yet.
That's interesting.
Because I've got one of these silly things called a job and I keep having to come to this place and it means I can't watch Narcos at the same time as doing my job.
Absolutely the worst, isn't it?
Absolutely a travesty.
So where we are, to get to your point, is essentially... season two starts with Escobar escaping from the Catedral, which, excuse my pronunciation, but it's basically this prison that he created himself.
Right, that big, enormous prison, in inverted commas, of course. Yeah. It looked more like some sort of daycare centre for supposedly grown-up men.
For warlords, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So Escobar struck a deal with the Colombian government. He was like, look, you can't extradite me to the US, but I'll pipe down and chill out if you put me in my own conveniently cozy prison where all my friends are. How about that, guys? And they agreed to it. And so we see him, the opening scenes, literally walking out of this prison, despite the fact there are sort of 7,000 army troops there to kill him.
So it actually takes up... at the same time that season one really ended, doesn't it?
There's only it's a continuation.
Complete continuation there. So that means that I suppose we're... Because I always felt season one was leading up to some point, because at that point, as I was watching that, I never realised that it was going to be a multi-season thing.
Right.
In my head, I just assumed, well, we all know how this is going to end, so clearly it will end.
Yeah.
Oh, but no.
No.
So do we know... Do we have any indication on how season two is going to resolve itself at the moment? Are we actually going to see some sort of, I suppose you could say, resolution in very, very loose terms?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, if you'd asked me this all of an hour ago before they had announced seasons three and four, I would have been like, I think we all know what happened to Pablo Escobar, you know, and that's kind of the thing when you're making biopics of true life people, you kind of know what happens. But now they've said that seasons three and four are going to happen. And what's going on in the direction of season two is that it's sort of expanded beyond Escobar into what the impact of the war on drugs in Colombia was on its society and, you know, the wider drugs market as a whole. And I feel like eventually they'll tap into that and see how... You know, Pablo Escobar started off in season one. What on earth does that spiral into as a butterfly effect by season three or four?
Well, I want to ask you a couple more questions about this, but first, let's hear a quick clip.
An alliance is forming with the objective of taking out Escobar.
This wasn't a manhunt. This was an invasion. But the problem was, Pablo was never more dangerous than when you almost have him.
Escobar se le respeta.
These guys aren't fighting by the same rules, so why should we?
You know what that means?
Oh, I do.
Indeed, as we heard the one of the lead characters there say, Pablo is never more dangerous than when you almost have him. And, of course, they do almost have him. They almost had him at the end of season one, and they almost have him again at in the premiere episode of season two. It's not spoiling anything to say that. And, of course, lots of blood is shed, as would be expected. But I suppose it does have that sort of problem that it's always dangling this sort of carrot in front of you, and we know that... That carrot is just going to continue moving off into the distance. Do you find it's getting a little bit frustrating, even though we're only into season two?
Yes. I mean, that complaint has been made. But I think it's also really important to note that what season one did when it was just like, these are the bad guys, these are good guys, we've got to catch bad guys, you know, it's very simple, it's very Scorsese, you know, it was kind of, a gang drama. What's happened in season two is that it's far more nuanced. It's far more morally ambiguous. You see the characters turning and you see this huge story played out in the lives of the smaller characters, often the kind of the more innocent victims of Escobar's dealings. And that's how they settle it from just being this manhunt, really.
And there's also been the introduction of a new character from the American side as well, which I thought was quite an interesting turn of events. Now, we're only a couple of weeks away from the release of a new movie starring Bryan Cranston, The Infiltrator,
right,
which sort of takes place in a similar sort of universe. Are you sensing that maybe Narcos is, well, probably following on from Breaking Bad, of course, but it's sort of setting off this wider interest in this particular world of drug lords and the people that have tried to tackle those sorts of problems in various aspects of the world. It is igniting a wider interest in people, isn't it?
I think so, yeah, because, you know, this is a part of the world and part of a set of dealings that most normal people going about their lives sitting and watching Netflix will not be privy to, largely, thankfully. But you know, maybe the commissioners saw the success of Breaking Bad and saw how people got really obsessed with that kind of the Mexican drug lord scene. And then, of course, there was Better Call Saul, which is very much involved in cartel land as well. And yeah, I mean, the two could come together. I'm pretty sure someone could write a script for a fantasy weird spin-off where Heisenberg turns up and like battles the cartels or something. You never know.
We'll have to take that off air, Alice. I think that's a new job description just for us, I think. Now, both seasons 1 and 2 of Narcos are available to stream right now on Netflix, which I'm sure you're already all too aware of. And now moving along, of course, Downton Abbey is over and people have been trying to fill that void with plenty of period dramas. And one of the most recent is ITV's Victoria, which follows the early life of Queen Victoria from her accession to the throne at age 18 to her marriage to Prince Albert. Let's hear a clip first.
I believe there's quite a crowd outside waiting to hear the proclamation. Perhaps now would be a good time to show yourself on the balcony.
In the proclamation, I'm referred to as Alexandrina Victoria, but I do not like the name Alexandrina. From now on, I wish to be called Victoria.
Queen Victoria.
That's a clip there from Queen Victoria, the new ITV series chronicling the Queen. So, Alice, I was reading a bit of the initial reaction to Queen Victoria at the weekend, and a lot of people had picked up on how it just came across as very, very trashy television, and a lot of other commentators looked at the casting of Queen Victoria and thought that was a little bit too predictably beautified for television. I mean, this is not one for the historians, is it?
It's really not. If you were sitting there with your history books out, you would probably be outraged. I'm not sure the extent to which the word trashy can be levelled at it, mostly because what it's replacing, which is Downton, by its latter series had got really trashy and very soapy. And unfortunately, I don't think Sunday evening period costume dramas there's always going to be a bit of bodice ripping, essentially.
Isn't it okay, though, for something like Downton to be a little bit trashy, because it sort of came at the period drama concept from that sort of soap opera setting, didn't it? That was part of the genius, blending soap opera with something that has always been this sort of respectable, very, very ultra-British sort of institution on television. Whereas the fact that this one is attaching one of the longest-reigning queens to a television series, maybe there is more of an expectation that you need to treat this in a certain way.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. I mean, Downton, for what it's worth, I'd argue started out as a sort of a blousy sort of first season, but it wasn't trashy.
What a good word, blousy.
So blousy. But yeah, it started off sort of quite flamboyant, but it was never trashy. It became trashy. But to return to your point about it being Queens, yeah, I mean, we British people love costume dramas, but they love the royals on an equal par, I'd say. And that's maybe where some of the upset is coming. They make up all these things about her proposing to people she never proposed to. You know, there is the beautiful argument. I mean, for what it's worth, there aren't that many photos of the young Queen Victoria in existence, so we never really know. And I dare say if they put someone who is slightly more plain in front, there'd be complaints about that as well.
Makes it easier to cast someone like Emily Blunt, as happened in the movies a little while ago. So what about selling this overseas then? Because, of course, everyone knows who Queen Victoria is here, and many parts of the world, obviously, people will know very well who she is. But because Queen Victoria was, for a very long time, the longest reigning monarch, and then was superseded by the current queen, Queen Elizabeth. So that means that she has been in the news internationally a little bit in recent times. Is that something that's part of the background here? Is ITV perhaps looking for something that can be another international hit for that reason?
I mean, I think they would have sat up from Downton and been like, crikey, this is a good way to make money. I think, actually, even for Victoria, which is, as you say, probably one of our more famous monarchs, it's a bit niche. I mean, we're looking at her right at the beginning of her reign. We're, you know, I think a lot of people say, if you did a straw poll of people in other countries and were said, oh, what do you think? They'd be able to tell you what a Victorian house was, or the Victorian, what a Victorian dress was, but they probably wouldn't be able to tell you why it was called Victorian necessarily, and they certainly wouldn't care about what she was like when she was 19 either.
So this is based on Queen Victoria's journals, but of course it has a lot of fun with the truth.
Right, of course.
It's television, it's a television drama, it's allowed to do that, it's fine, but I suppose I look at this and wonder, why would you base this on Victoria's journals then, if it's going to quite clearly open you up to so much criticism because you're having so much fun with that? Why not just be upfront with it from the beginning and just say, look, it's Queen Victoria, but it's a fictional version of her, and you haven't seen Victoria like this before, racy queen.
I think even in 2016, Ben, I'm not sure the British public are ready for racy queen. Sadly. It's a bit too much to handle.
Well, you be the judge. If you're ready for a racy queen, why don't you tune in to Victoria, which is screening on Sunday nights on ITV here in the United Kingdom. If you're listening from overseas, then no doubt there is a way for you to get hold of that program as well. Now, plenty of listeners will know the dread of a bad dinner party. Well, don't we all? And our final show up for discussion today is a dark comedy all about the horrors of social engagement. Set in the house of an eccentric couple called Helene and Sasha, it follows their guests, Gabe and Nat, as they try to get to know their new neighbours around the table. Let's hear a clip.
I don't even know these people.
They've asked us to dinner. We're new. We don't know anyone.
But are they our kind of people?
Create a lovely, lovely evening for two of our best friends in the world and for two people we don't even know.
Yeah? Well, I didn't even want them to come.
You ask what kind of person you would be if the Gestapo marched into town.
You'd be a Nazi.
I'm not a Nazi. I've got Tony Benn's autobiography.
That was a clip there from The Circuit, which is streaming now on All Four. Now, Alice, was this a show that you could identify with? I mean, just from the opening line there, it kind of feels like it's something perhaps all of us could identify with, somewhat unfortunately.
Yes, so the clip opened with the conversation between the kind of couple it centres around. The guy who's called Gabe is played by Adil Akhtar, who is from Utopia. People recognise him from Utopia, and he's brilliant in it. And yeah, that conversation, I'm pretty sure everyone's had that conversation. They're like, oh God, why are we doing this? We don't even like them. And then, you know, you can maybe leave and maybe you have that conversation afterwards. And where I felt that The Circuit maybe went slightly wrong is that it sort of, if it kept it at that level of realism, it would have been spot on. Instead, what it did is it amped it up way too high. And as a result, kind of became slightly farcical, which was a shame because there were elements of pure genius in it.
So, okay, so a farcical comedy is something I love farcical comedies when they're done well. Is the problem that you had with this the fact that it makes you feel like it's a realistic comedy setting and then suddenly flips it to be what you felt was unrealistic?
Yeah, and also it just wasn't that funny, essentially. I mean, we could be clever about it. It just wasn't that funny.
There's nothing worse than a comedy that just isn't funny. Okay, so this is, it's meant to be a dark comedy, though, and I suppose you could argue that dark comedies aren't necessarily supposed to be laugh-out-loud funny. I'm thinking of something like Curb Your Enthusiasm, for instance.
Right, right.
Something that can make you feel, oh, it's uncomfortable. The Office.
Just too close to home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there is a bit of that. And what is interesting about The Circuit is at the moment it's only a pilot, but it's been massively critically rated, so it'll probably go to a series. But it's from Sharon Horgan, who has had an incredible year, really. And she says in all these interviews that all of her comedy is kind of based on things that have happened to her in real life. So it does give a shine on to the kind of dinner party she goes to.
Well, of course, we just saw her. She was the writer and she co-starred in Catastrophe alongside Rob Delaney. So she has been going from strength to strength.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, what are your expectations from what we've seen here in The Circuit? I mean, you say that it is likely to become an entire series, but despite the fact of not being incredibly funny in its pilot, is it okay for things not to be funny in their pilot? Is there enough time, do you think, to pick up on that?
I mean, history would attest that things that frequently aren't funny in their pilot go on to great successes. I mean, there are also, and also frequently pilot shows end up being in a far more weird or clunky format than the rest of the series becomes. I would happily sit down and watch more of this. I'm really curious to see where it goes. The title suggests that there's going to be more dinner parties and we might see some other characters and it might develop in a way that everybody is familiar with if they've ever been to a dinner party, basically.
Well, no dinner parties at Alice Vincent's house then. That's The Circuit, which is available to stream now on All Four. And that brings us to the end of today's show. Thanks to my guest, Alice Vincent. You have been listening to The Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Rylan. My producer was Holly Fisher, and my researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time tomorrow. We will be talking books with Georgina Godwin. But for now, thanks for listening, and bye-bye.